the idea of going to college just wasn't implanted into our heads. It was just get a job. Somewhere along the line, my mother implanted in me that I could do more. So I feel like that was a huge part of why I then decided I wanted to go to school.
My name's Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy.
Hi, everyone. My name is Brian Nickerson. I'm guest hosting for Esprit Devora on Women in Tech. I'm really excited for our guest today, Patricia Garcia. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brian.
I want to start actually with moms in tech, if we can.
Yes, absolutely. I came upon a group called Moms in Tech on Facebook, and I realized that it was more than just a Facebook group. It is a group of women who were looking out for each other, and they affectionately refer to each other as mints. You get it? M in tech. So I started to really get to know the women in that group, realizing, oh my God, you guys understand me. Being a woman in tech isn't enough. It's being a mother in tech that has its own unique challenges. Because you have, it's one thing, yes, I'm a woman and you deal with some issues when you're the only woman in the room. Every woman can understand what we're all going through. But then there's that extra issue. I have to leave at 5 o'clock because I got to get to my child. And that doesn't always go well in all the companies that I've worked in where I've been like the token mom.
Yeah. And so if I can, I just want to own what just happened before the show where it's actually illustrative, right, of some of the challenges you face where we're recording with guests today. We're running late a little bit, and not respectful fully of your time. And you're having to make changes with your son to be on the show today, which I appreciate. And it's also indicative, right, of some of the challenges.
Yes.
I think that not just you, but moms in tech face.
Absolutely. And as you know, being in tech, it's very demanding. It could be unpredictable. Your boss doesn't really care that you have something going on at home. As far as the business is concerned, business comes first. I thought about, I've tried many times to try to start my own business, but honestly, it's better to work for somebody because I did get a little bit more freedom and flexibility. So you just have to look for that when you're working on projects with people. So then I've figured it out after 20 years of being in tech. I've figured it out how to be there for both. But yes, there are moments where you're stressing, trying to figure out how am I going to get this project done and get my son what he needs for school tomorrow.
Right. I guess are there, because we hear a lot about companies like being more open in terms of flexible time and allowing people to live their lives.
Yes. Right.
From 30 or 40 years ago, it was like you couldn't leave the office. Now there's at least a little more flexibility.
Yes.
Have we come far enough, though?
I think we can go a little bit further. I still hear stories. I'm long done with breastfeeding, but I still hear stories of women who have to take that time out, 15 minutes twice a day, possibly during work. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's equivalent to someone taking a cigarette break. Someone else is taking a pumping break. And it's getting better. But I think it can be a little bit better because one of the biggest issues that I feel that we face is we'll get passed over for promotions and moving forward or getting the cool projects because the assumption is you're not going to be there 24/7 and available. So, it is getting better, but I can understand because if we choose to sacrifice for our families, I have to look at it from that perspective. It's okay if I didn't make director level when my colleague who was at the same level as me did. I'm creating a basketball star at home because I'm dedicating time into his career and his life, getting him out through school and into college. So I have to look at it that way. I'm working on two projects for two different entities.
Does our society need to do a better job of recognizing that?
We're getting better. I like to be positive, and I do feel we're getting better. And now my team that I'm working with now, a lot of them don't have kids, but it's mostly men. I'm surrounded by engineers, and surprisingly, I get a lot of support. If I say my son is sick, the next day someone's, how is he? How is he doing? Is he feeling better? Where before people just didn't ask me how he was doing. They're like, okay, well, will you be in tomorrow?
Yeah.
It was a balancing act that we always have to go through. And it's like, we still want to be leaders in our industry. But at the same time, you know, you've got a little human that wants you to be a leader to them.
So I was hearing a sort of before and after. Is there a line for you? Is there a moment in time where that changed, or is it a gradual change, or is it part of the Me Too movement? What do you think?
I think it started to change when I realized that my son, he was going to fall down. He was going to go down the wrong path if I didn't dedicate more time to him. And he was diagnosed with ADD, which isn't the worst thing in the world. I've got ADD. A lot of people probably listening have ADD. But he needed that extra help, or he was going to fail in school. And I realized that I had to just let people know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to miss this. I have to be at his school. I'm going to be there for him. Mm-hmm. And those are the choices I made. Others, they have different choices. They have two parents in the home who can take over some of the duties. Some people are lucky enough to be able to hire extra help for them. So where was the line? I think the line was when I saw that my son could potentially be failing, and I couldn't fit. And if he was failing in school, that means I was failing him.
Yeah. And are you, if I can ask, are you a single parent?
Yes.
So there's some unique challenges, not only some, probably big unique challenges with that.
Yes. But I got through it. I found a network of people.
Yeah.
I actually grew up in outside of Chicago. I had family. I had lots of family to help me. I can call my parents, be like, hey, there's no school tomorrow. Take my son. Yeah, of course he can come. Okay, no problem. But I've always wanted to move to Los Angeles, and the opportunity arose, and I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna take my son and move 2,000 miles away from everybody where I know nobody. So that was a challenge, but it was a risk that I took, and I'm glad that I took it, because I needed the change, and my career was heading in that direction. So I managed to make it work. I found a network of people. I found people willing to help me. And that's all I did. It's like, I had a vision and I set out. I'm like, this is what we're going to do. And we did it. We made it work.
It sounds like not just found, but created.
Yes. Yeah, I did create it. I reached out. I'm like, okay, who do I start with? Yeah. What about the PTA?
So you said you wanted to come to Los Angeles for a long time. Why? Yes. Why Los Angeles? Obviously, we're Esprit's a big fan of LA. Many of the folks listening are from LA. But what was the draw for you?
Well, ever since I was a little girl, I was born in San Diego, and my mother moved me, when I was about two. So I didn't really get to appreciate, you know, the tropical weather and the palm trees.
She was looking for better weather, right, in Chicago?
Yes. Yes, she took me to there. I don't know what she did to me. And I just grew up knowing that I was from Southern California, and I always had this desire to go back. Mm-hmm. And Los Angeles, I think at the time when I was younger, I think I was more drawn to the whole glitz and glam of Los Angeles, but somehow I just put it in my head, I want to move to Los Angeles. And eventually I was working with a company for 5 years, and they offered me the opportunity to move me to the Los Angeles office. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Oh, it wasn't that quick, actually. I was like, wait, what about my child? I think it was like a year worth of negotiating back and forth and me figuring things out before I officially made the move.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you're in UX.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So, I'm a user experience designer for maybe 10 years. Before that, I was a software developer. That's where I started my career, out of college, software development. But then I wanted to do more design work, and I've went back to school, got my master's degree and a human computer interaction, and which led me into a career in user experience. So it's been great. It's where I belong. It's what I want to do. It allows me not just to be creative, but as a user experience designer, so we design the experience for people using digital interfaces, so software apps, mobile apps, websites. It's so much more than just a UI. A lot of people assume UX and UI is the same thing. It's so much bigger than that. It's understanding what people's motivations are, what makes them happy to feel like they've accomplished their goal. It's not just that we figured out the color of a button. It was like,
right.
You know, was this the right approach to begin with? There's some cognitive psychology, you know, courses that I took as part of that course. So that was just an interest that I had, and it fits well with who I am as a person, because I'm always fascinated with what makes humans do things. I mean, that's very general, but just anything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, why did that serial killer kill so many people? I want to know what's in his head.
We just got dark quick.
I know. How did we go from beautiful? Now it's, yeah. But I mean, that's just an extreme. Yeah, it's a very wide range. But yeah, so, and then of course, I've always been interested in technology. So it just seemed like the perfect place for me to be as a user experience designer. So now it's my goal in life to kind of evangelize the philosophy of user experience. And I like talking to people in starting with their new companies or new products. And it's just like on my own, I'm just like, okay, I'll take a look at your product and let me give you some advice. And it's not just looking at it and saying, this is what you need to do. It's more looking at the big picture. Like, how do you incorporate user experience into your business? How,
right.
At the very beginning. So it doesn't become an afterthought.
Right.
So it's definitely the place where I need to be. There's a lot of area yet to explore.
Yeah.
And I'm good at it.
That's awesome. And knowing that you're good at it and feeling that and living that, right? Like just in the studio, I'm feeling that, which is amazing. Are there LA companies that you think get user experience, like do a really good job of it? Any that kind of come to mind?
I really feel like in the LA market, it's like a novel idea. Like, ooh, this user experience, let's try this. And not with every company. I haven't spoken to every single company, so I hope I'm not offending anyone. But I've the encounters that I've had with some people, it does come off as either an afterthought or it gets mingled with UI, that it's just the design of the interface. When I think of user experience, and most people that I've had the honor of mentoring under, also think of it as user experience. It's that entire, from when you wake up to the idea that you have that you want to do something to actually completing that task.
Yeah.
So it could be, I need to go to the bank and deposit money. So, you know, are you dealing with an ATM? Are you dealing with an app? Are you dealing with a teller? Like, what does that person feel like? Do I feel good when I walk out of there that I've done what I've came here to do?
Yeah.
So it's not a new concept. Obviously we've been, you know, architecture thinks about it as well in a different way. You know, human factors is a field that's been around for years.
Yeah.
When designing furniture or all kinds of products, is just taking it into the digital realm.
Yeah.
So, and there's just so much there to explore when we get into virtual reality and AI and all of that.
There's about to be more to explore, right?
Yes.
As AI and AR explodes.
I know. I'm just barely dabbling in those areas.
I want to touch a little bit on the Me Too movement,
okay.
If we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously I'll bring a little bit of a masculine voice and space to it. But what strikes you about the movement so far? Like, what are you optimistic about? Where does it still need to go? Share your thoughts, like kind of big picture view, and then we'll dive in more.
Well, now that I've seen the movement has a name to it. I've been a part of it for years.
Yeah.
But now that it is gaining momentum, I'm the most excited about the male allies.
Yes.
Where finally we have men who are speaking up for women and with us and not questioning every story. I mean, there are that small percentage of stories that need to be questioned if they don't sound right. I don't think every accusation should be taken at face value and destroying people's careers. I've seen it happen also when I was younger, but at the same time, it's more, okay, stop for a second. Let's all think about what's being said here. Don't necessarily say she's a liar. Don't necessarily say he needs to be fired. Let's review what happened and then we can decide what to do. I mean, I'm glad that it's taking momentum. It's picking up momentum, but I've always been very cautious about some of the casualties along the way.
Uh-huh.
And, I've always been very careful, and I I tend to speak very careful about it as well when new accusations come up. Mm. I'm just most excited, I said, about the new allies that we're getting.
One thought I would share around that is that the world is very much a masculine world, or it has been, mm-hmm. the construct that we've created. And so the lens through which many of these things are looked is like, it's okay that there's been male transgressions for thousands of years. We just don't want to have one male picked out the wrongly for the transgressing, mm-hmm. versus like that whole shit is not okay. And it's got to actually, like, we're on the birth of a new construct.
Right.
And I have heard other men use that worry about the movement as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem to me as a male that most of what you will see getting traction in social media
mm-hmm.
has a kernel of truth. And that's why it gets traction. And the places where there's not a kernel of truth generally are not, those stories are not coming to the fold, or they're getting like shut down pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So at least my perspective on it is like, yes, there may be a little bit of casualties, mm-hmm. but like we're working from this like tsunami of transgression that now mm-hmm. needs to switch the other way mm-hmm. in order for real change to happen.
Right. No, and I see that as well. You're right. If something isn't true, the truth will come out, and it's maybe you've got a bruise as opposed to you got completely knocked down. So yeah, I see in that. Only I think because I come from a past of seeing it happen, I'm being cautious is all, because I seen somebody's life almost get destroyed. Mm. This is before Me Too movement.
Yeah.
And luckily I was there to back them up.
Right.
So so what you're saying has some truth to it, that if there is, as long as we find out enough about that, what really happened, so that person, maybe they walk away with a little scratch from it all, but nothing damaging.
Right. Yeah. And there's, there needs to be discernment in the transgression, right? What mm-hmm. Harvey Weinstein did is obviously at way far one end of the spectrum.
Right.
And then you have other transgressions, a comment that are not legal felonies.
Right. Aziz Ansari.
Aziz Ansari maybe. But there still is an element of truth that like that's inappropriate behavior.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that also like sometimes it's the system of all those little things are like, we'll let those little things go mm-hmm. is what actually lets the like.
Yes. No, I wouldn't let the little ones go. Now, if I can just speak on that really quickly, since we brought it up, Aziz Ansari issue. The problem that I had with that is calling it something that it wasn't. Mm. He was an asshole. He was definitely not a gentleman. He was outed. Okay, so women dating him will know. But the way to call that a sexual assault was insulting to those women who've been assaulted.
Yeah,
we've all been in a situation. Most of us, a lot of people have been in a situation that we regret. Mm-hmm. And no, he shouldn't have treated her that way. He should have treated her like a lady.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a sexual assault. And that was insulting to real victims of sexual assault is how I looked at it. But he survived it, right?
Right?
It was fine. Like you said, the story came out, he survived it. Hopefully she learned too. She doesn't need to be shamed. She just didn't know. She didn't know any better. He didn't know any better. And hopefully they both learned from the situation and she understands what real sexual assault is. She just probably didn't know what to compare it to.
Right.
She's probably never been sexually assaulted in her life. And
well, our culture needs to develop more language around these issues, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of times, especially from a US-based perspective, like this stuff doesn't get talked about that much.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like we're all developing more language and more discernment in this space.
You're right. It's not black and white. It's not one extreme or the other. There's those in-betweens. There's the whole like the stereotypical fraternity bro.
Right. Yes.
Like how many women can we sleep with, and that sort of mentality where they may not be doing anything wrong, or the pickup artist.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about? They're not doing anything wrong. They're getting permission, but they're playing mind games.
Yeah.
And going back to what I do as a user experience in our field, we have this thing called black patterns that mean that's where people basically take it's like a therapist who uses mind games on a person. Like they've learned to be a therapist, and rather than use it for good, they use it to destroy a person. And that's what pickup artist is doing.
Right.
And it that sort of thing irritates me. And when I see it in my field happening as well, when interfaces are purposely designed to force you to do one thing. One of the popular ones is switching buttons. Like you'll have yes on the right, no on the left, yeah. and then they'll switch it on you because they're trying to trick you into agreeing to something.
Or like on the mobile devices where it's normally back is in the bottom right. And then all of a sudden it's like some like like function is down there. And the back is actually on the top left.
Exactly.
Or
they're trying to fool you into, and that that's not right. That needs to be called out too. Yeah. I mean, they're not assaulting me, but it's, I might claim they are, but you're right. We need some sort of language in between to be able to say, this is not okay. If you want to be a decent human being, don't act this way.
Yeah. Patricia, is there advice you would give to men to better support the change that's happening in the world?
I would say, don't be so afraid to well, how do I, because this is what I tell my son. You can't be afraid to take on the qualities that are traditionally given to, are considered called feminine, like such as it's okay to cry if you're feeling sad. It's okay to express your feelings. And if you're angry, there's a healthy way to deal with that anger. Just a lot of the ways that we're raising men have been raised to believe, I feel like that's probably it's causing the problems, not just against women, but as we've seen what's been happening in the world, you know, causing these other tragedies with anger. And so I don't like this idea of raising boys saying it's not okay. To feel this way. It's not okay to feel. It's not okay to cry. When it is, I mean, I've got a very strong young man. He's been raised by a woman, but he's a tough kid. Yeah. You know, he was raised by a tough woman. And I will cry if I'm sad. I will cry. If I'm frustrated, I will cry. And he gets angry. That's fine. He doesn't hit things. He deals with it. He talks about it. He moves on. There's nothing wrong with talking about it. So I just think that men can learn, just as women can learn from men. I think men can learn from women in how we express our emotions and our feelings, and that you can still be emotional and still be masculine.
Yeah, absolutely. So Patricia, can you share with us a little bit about your background, where you came from? Because it uniquely informs where you are today.
Yeah. So I grew up in a city outside of Chicago that was a huge neighborhood of immigrants from Mexico. So Spanish was actually my first language. I had to learn English in school if I wanted to speak to some of my American friends. Even though we were majority Hispanic, that's how we grew up. That's what we knew. And the idea of going to college just wasn't implanted into our heads. It was just get a job. A lot of my friends had kids in high school or just out of high school. Mm. I was the only one then to go on. I had to give up a lot of my friends to go to college.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, my mother implanted in me that I could do more. So, it was, I feel like that was a huge part of why I then decided I wanted to go to school. And it wasn't until somebody came to our high school, talked about being a computer engineer. And I said, I can do that. And so I just, the little opportunities that I had to work with technology, I realized that I was figuring these things out. And I wanted out of this neighborhood. I wanted more for myself. My friends that were working now, and they were in offices, and they were making a little bit more money than I was because I was going to school, but eventually I surpassed them. I didn't go to school with people that I grew up with. I couldn't afford to be in a dorm because I had to pay for my own education. Mm. So there was just, I think I brought a lot of rawness into my field where I wasn't spoiled. I wasn't entitled. Not that a lot of people were, a lot of people struggled as well, but I feel like I always brought that street attitude into the office. And by that, I mean, I did never picked up like the company way of speaking. Mm-hmm. I would call bullshit when I saw it. And some people didn't like it sometimes, but I'm like, I can't sugarcoat it. This is what it sounds like, what you're saying. And so I feel like that's what it brought to me in the field and working, especially working user experience. It's like I have to think about, put myself in people's shoes. And I think I've had the opportunity to be in different shoes, that it was easy for me to kind of jump back and forth.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And do you see, I mean, do many of your peers now, is your background unique amongst your peers in terms of, you know, specific to kind of UX and engineering?
So far it has been. I haven't met anybody else who I mean, doesn't mean they don't exist. But like, for instance, when you decide to go out after work, we didn't have a lot in common. A lot of my coworkers, they wanted to go to the bar, you know, sit down, have a conversation. I grew up with the neighborhoods that I grew up in. We grew up with DJs and house music and going to the clubs. And that was usually my unwinding.
Yeah.
It was a lot different. And like company parties were unusual because they were all at the bar drinking. I was on the dance floor dancing. And so, and there was, there would be a few, every once in a while, I encounter one or two people that are with me.
Yeah.
But for the majority of me and my coworkers, that's, I'm still kind of different.
Yeah. Which is good. I think that, that different perspective, right, in terms of creating unique experiences and what you do in UX is probably a gift for the companies you work with.
Yes. I believe so. Yes.
Beautiful. So what advice would you give to young people who want to get into this field?
I would say that, you know, don't be afraid to just try something new, different. I mean, that's the whole point of our field is like giving people the best experience possible. So how do you, how can you do that if you're going to be stuck in a box yourself? You have to be able to get out of your box, get out of your bubble and try something new, you know, go on vacation by yourself, take a bus. If you've never taken the bus, just do something that you've never done before. And without knowing what you're going to do when you get there, just figure it out as you go. And by allowing your brain, your mind to expand in such a way, it helps you then design for other people.
Yeah, completely. Mm-hmm. I saw some stat recently that this is like super narrow, but it was like some the odds of being, I think, a Nobel Prize winner. And they basically go up significantly if your hobby, the more creative your hobby is. So like dancing is one of the most, dancing is like 22 times more likely to be a Nobel Prize winner in a hard math field like you know, physics or chemistry. If you dance in your free time, you're 22 more times likely or whatever to be a Nobel Prize winner than if you, you know, read more books or something.
I'm going
to
be working on my Nobel Prize.
Nice. You're a dancer. House music. We got it. We got it going on after this.
Latin music, all of that.
Amazing. Well, with that, Patricia, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks, Brian.
Wonderful learning from you. And I think, you know, your experience as a single mom, I'm sure, is inspiring others in tech. And it's just great to hear your story and to share it with the world.
Thank you.
So with that, my name is Brian Nickerson, guest hosting for Esprit Devora. Patricia, if folks want to find you, is there a good place where they can find you online?
Yeah, you can either find me on Twitter. I have a couple of handles, depending if you want my business or personal. Patty G, P-A-T-T-E-G. Or Lucky, spelled with two E's, 13, Lucky 13. On Instagram, it's underscore Lucky with two E's, 13, because somebody took the other one. But those would be the best places to find me.
Amazing. Well, Patricia, thank you so much.
Thank you.
UpGuard, one of my favorite companies in Mountain View, combines asset discovery, security ratings, and vendor questionnaires for the only complete cyber risk solution. Not only do they keep us safe online, they empower women in tech internally. They focus on hiring female engineers to make sure that we rise to the top. So I welcome you to take a look at their job opportunities from Mountain View to New York, New York to Sydney, Australia. They are a company worth exploring. Their mentorship culture is magnetic. Mention the Women in Tech podcast when you apply, just as they celebrate women in tech. We want to celebrate you too. So make sure to let us know when you've reached out to UpGuard and we'll make sure to feature you on the Women in Tech social channels. We believe in you. UpGuard.com. Visit them for yourself. You'll see exactly what I mean. The Women in Tech podcast is an independent production funded by you, the community. To support Women in Tech, if you believe in the vision as much as we do, please consider going to womenintechpodcast.com. That's womenintechpodcast.com, and just click on the contribution link to keep this podcast going. Thank you.